This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. It's 7:33. Students at the West Virginia University School of Medicine Martinsburg campus are getting a side dish of cooking lessons along with their regular medical training. As Cecilia Mason reports, the Eastern Division campus is teaching future doctors about nutrition.
The WVU Medical School's Eastern Division is trying to fill a void in doctor education through a new class called MedChef. The 14 students who are currently earning degrees in the Eastern Panhandle are taking the class. Associate Dean for Student Services, Dr. Rosemarie Canarella-Lorenzetti, says medical students have not traditionally learned about nutrition.
In biochemistry in their second year, they're taught a little bit about how glucose is uptaken by the cell and how the muscles utilize glucose or stored sugars like glycogen and those kinds of things. But when you ask a typical third-year student what kind of diet advice they give to the patient, they usually said, oh, we're told we're not supposed to do that. That's supposed to come from dietitians. And certainly in my over 30 years of practice as a family doctor, patients ask me all the time for advice about eating.
Family medicine professor Dr. Mark Cucuzella says the goal is to arm future doctors with information they can pass along to patients when necessary.
I don't see in a 15-minute clinic visit a doctor's going to break out a fry pan and start chopping vegetables. But if, you know, what we'd like to do is connect the dots.
Cucuzella says those dots can include information about nutrition, what foods are healthy, or even what cooking classes are available in the community. He says eating right is the first step to maintaining a healthy weight, and those who are not overweight can often avoid diseases like diabetes or heart attacks.
We have all this awesome new technology to take care of all these, you know, really bad things people are getting now. But I think, you know, part of our mission is let's not have to send people for all these things too. And let's, you know, not send them for the cardiac bypass or stent. Let's prevent it.
The students and their professors took a cooking class at Blue Ridge Community and Technical College where they learned how to make dishes like California rolls and chocolate brownies with healthier ingredients. Lorenzetti says another lesson focused on how to ask a patient's eating habits in a non-judgmental way.
One time we took the whole afternoon and we were just working with the students on how do you take a nutrition history from a patient. I mean, I challenge all of you to think about the last time you went for a checkup for the doctor and they asked, what do you eat?
Students Rob Shangalini from Annapolis, Maryland, and Wade Gilmore from Elkins say the information they're learning will help them be better doctors.
You can't have somebody walk into your office and then you explain to them 10 recipes. Like that's just, there's no time for that in a clinic setting. But you do want them to make the right decision. So something like telling them to stay on the perimeter of the grocery store where all the fresher foods and ingredients are. If you give them simple rules like that, then generally you're gonna just kind of eat healthier anyway. Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of misconceptions about nutrition that are out there. So I think as a future doctor, it's very important to learn how to be healthy, how to eat healthy, what good nutrition actually means. So in the future, when I'm in my clinic, I want to be able to know the right types of things to tell my patients to help them lead healthier lives and to eat healthier, because nutrition has an absolutely massive impact on the well-being of your patients.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Cecilia Mason in Martinsburg.
Concord University is partnering with a school from the land down under to learn more about Australian culture. Technology is helping to surpass geographical boundaries. As Jared Klein reports, students hosted a symposium to share their thoughts on the partnership so far.
It's a collaboration that spans nearly 10,000 miles. This semester, Concord University education students enrolled in Educational Psychology, Assessment, and Technology teamed up with students from Victoria University in Melbourne, Australia. The partnership is part of an effort to compare education systems on a global level. Each week, the students use one of their collaborative technologies to talk with their partners in Australia and discuss differences between the two education systems. One of these technologies is VoiceThreads, a web-based application which allows students to recent images, videos, and documents. At the end of the semester, the students will finally meet each other face-to-face, virtually that is, over Skype, a video messaging service. Dr. Anita Reynolds, an education professor at Concord University, says the symposium is a celebration of what students have learned and the technology they have learned to use, which includes wikis, VoiceThreads, and a final meeting on Skype. She says that students are surprised to learn the differences between the school systems here in West Virginia as compared to those in Australia.
There are a number of things different, which is very good for our students to realize that not everyone does things the way that we do things in our country. So I think this gives them a broader vision that our way is not necessarily the universal way. So I feel like both countries get some good ideas.
Some of these differences are quite noticeable. Education students created posters to show differences in issues in education, assessments, as well as diversity between school systems. Michael Bailey is a biology student at Concord. He hopes to become a biology teacher at a high school in southern West Virginia. Bailey notices that it seems education is taken more seriously down under.
Over there, I think education is valued higher than it is here. The parents are more involved. They don't have school buses. They don't provide lunches. All the kids pack. Most of the parents actually walk their kids to school. And that way the teachers can talk to them daily if they need to. Here, it's much harder to stay in contact with parents.
And although the students say they learned a lot about the differences between Australian and American education, they have also found similarities that will help them in the job. Mindy Meadows, a student at Concord studying to become an elementary education teacher, says she feels better prepared for the classroom thanks to the partnership's focus on diversity.
I think it just teaches us a lot about diversity, and because the United States is a very diverse nation as well as Australia, and I just think it's very, very important to know what's going on around the world.
Later in the day, local art education students turned several classrooms into a safari. Athens Elementary School students joined the safari to learn more about Australian culture. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jared Klein in Athens.
You're listening to West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:40. Cloudy with a chance of rain showers today. Highs in the 60s and 70s. Overcast with another chance of showers overnight tonight. Lows in the 40s and 50s.
Support provided by Chevron, putting billions back in the U.S. economy this year through energy projects that support job growth. More information available at chevron.com.
The Greater Huntington Park and Recreation District is banking on the idea that if Wi-Fi is available, people will come to the park. Clark Davis has more about this unique idea.
An internet service provider based in Huntington pipes a signal directly to antennas located at strategic locations in the park. That signal is turned into Wi-Fi, available to connect to mobile devices in the park. At 50 megabytes per second, the park district thinks they're onto something that the public will enjoy. Kevin Brady is the executive director.
With today's technology, there's really no reason that you can't do that in a park. So here we are. I could basically go in and access my email account and spend 2 hours here and work just like I was sitting at my desk.
At a cost of $400 an antenna, Brady thinks it's a good idea. He says it may seem backwards that at a place where people come to exercise and look at nature, it's trying to be a technological innovator for the area. Brady says in a time when everyone is glued to their smartphone, tablet, or computer, it just makes sense to provide them with another incentive to come to the parks in the area.
The thought process is combining old with new. We have always wanted people to get up from their couches, get out from in front of the computer, get out away from the TV, and come to the parks. And I know that we're not going to get everybody to put their smartphone down or put their laptop down and just go play.
Charlie Thuring was at Ritter Park Tuesday. He says he can see why some would like it, but says coming to the park is his time away from technology.
Really, should you be utilizing Wi-Fi while you're enjoying the outdoors and the scenery and maybe hanging out with your kids and stuff like that? Maybe you should be paying attention to them. That's my first immediate reaction to Wi-Fi in a park. I don't really think about getting on my phone or my laptop when I'm out enjoying the scenery.
Brady says, though, to others, the service will be useful, like Marshall students or those wanting to leave the office cubicle and work outside one afternoon. Or he says those exercising can now stream music off the internet without using their data plans. Besides Ritter Park, wireless has also been set up at Harris Riverfront Park in Huntington and soon at Rotary Park. Brady says the hope is to have wireless available at each of the parks they run in town. And so far, Brady says they're not worried about a lack of bandwidth at the parks.
They tell me that 100 users will not be a noticeable slowdown. 200 users, it might be. 300 users, and that's per unit. 300 users, it's going to really start slowing down. If we had a huge event here and everybody suddenly logged in at the same time, you might notice a slowdown.
Greater Huntington Park and Recreation District will combat the idea of overload by creating a layout that will alleviate problems.
We're setting up basically a grid system where there's a transceiver here, there's one at the fountain, there'll be one up here and one up here, and that grid system should cover the entire area, somewhat omnidirectional.
Brady says this will help bring the park district to the cutting edge. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
A campus-based organization at Concord University tracked down the first African-American student to attend the school. The Black Student Union invited Billy Owens to Athens earlier this month. As Jessica Lilly reports, Owens saw discrimination in his day, but not at the university.
It started after sophomore and Black Student Union President James Riley heard the legend of Billy Owens from faculty advisors on campus. Apparently, they'd searched for Owens in the past with no luck.
He said, "Have you ever heard of the first Black student to attend Concord?" And we said, "No, we never searched for him." So he told us that he was out there and that if we find the information, he'll help us try to find him. So he gave us a little bit of information. We looked him up in the library. We found his picture. And then eventually, Miss Terry Philpott, our advisor, she was able to locate him in the banner system here at Concord.
Owens made history in 1954 when he enrolled as the first African-American student and athlete when he joined the football team.
It became okay. Except when I joined the football team. Then I had some problems with traveling with the football team that I couldn't stay in the hotels that they stayed in. And they had to put me in another place or something that night. And some of the other teams that that we played at times made some negative speeches and things as towards me. But it didn't bother me because I was there to play football, and I wasn't afraid of them, and I just told them, look, I says, well, I'm here because I'm going to run over you.
Owens grew up in Guito in Mercer County, where his father worked as a coal miner. He remembers the town had mostly blacks with limited segregation. But Owens says in neighboring Matoka, things were different, and segregation was enforced.
That's the only movie place we could go to. If we want to go to a movie, we couldn't sit where we wanted to. We had a special area, just where we had to sit. Our parents told us, how to react to certain things like that. And we got to the point where we knew that's the way it was life for us. We couldn't do certain things. We couldn't go to certain lunch places to get something to eat unless we had to go. We couldn't go inside and sit at the counter or anything like that. We had to go around and go to a window where they had a window, special place like that where we had to go to.
But that's not what Owens found at Concord. Most of the games didn't require overnight trips, and the closer to Concord he stayed, the better.
What inspired me so much, because how friendly and they were with me, and we were all friends, and at the times that we were together all the time. And while I was here in Concord, as quietly as it was, I never realized that I was different. But because I never heard anything negative or anything of that nature.
Owen says he never thought of his time at Concord as historical until he got the phone call from the Black Student Union.
Looking for you.
And they were looking for me. Yeah. They knew it was me, but they didn't know where I was. And then when they contacted me, I didn't know it was going to come up to all of this, what it is now. But I was proud of them. I told them, I thanked them after I got here, and they called me and still telling me all that they wanted to do. We wanted you to do this, you want to do that. We're going to do this for you, want to do that for you. And I didn't feel that, I don't need all of that. Why have to do all of that? But that's what they wanted.
Student Union President James Riley was surprised to hear what Owen said about his experience at Concord.
I was expecting to hear him say he went through a lot of tough times. In fact, he actually said that he didn't experience any type of negativity at Concord. The players were great. The coaching staff was great. The administrators were great. And he didn't really experience any racism while he was here. The only form of racism he really experienced that he told me was when he played other teams and went to away games.
Riley is thankful that Owens helped open his door to a college education.
It was a humongous honor. I had never been able to speak to someone who, you know, was a forerunner for students like me. You know, without him taking that step out, I may not be here at Concord, you know. So it was such an honor to talk to him and meet his family and to learn about what he went through while he was at the school.
Owens majored in biology and physical education at Concord and was a member of the class of 1958. He served in the Air Force during the Korean War. He worked for 34 years in engineering at a hospital in New York until he retired in 2006. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Athens.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can listen to and read news stories on our new website, wvpublic.org. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Ashton Mara.
Support provided by Leave a Legacy, inspiring West Virginia's citizens to support their favorite charities through their wills and planned gifts. Online at lalwv.org.